This is Mark Langdon's Bets Club.
Hello and a warm welcome back to Mark Langdon's Bets Club, your one-stop shop for football betting insight. Jack Reeve and Mark Langdon to guide you through proceedings. Plenty to get through this week. The Premier League returns. Dan Charles will be back to deliver his best EFL bets for the weekend. And the transfer deadline day to review. And we'll start with that, Mark. It was I feel over the past few years, deadline day's maybe not been the hype and the hysteria that it once was, but there was plenty of cash spent this transfer window. What caught your eye?
Well, I mean, yeah, absolutely, Jack. I mean, extraordinary final few days, wasn't it? I mean, you know, when Southampton are spending 40 million quid, then you know things are going crazy. I suppose, I mean, what caught my eye, the two that caught my eye most were Enzo Fernandez, obviously British transfer record, Benfica, you know, signed him, what was it, about 10 million not that long ago. Obviously, he had a good World Cup. He had a really strong season in Portugal. Feels like the type of midfielder that Chelsea need, I would say, given that Jorginho, we haven't mentioned him going to Arsenal, but, you know, they needed to freshen it up there with Jorginho and N'Golo Kante. So I think Enzo Fernandez, you know, improves Chelsea. But then, like, if you think how much they've spent and the amount of players that they've brought in, it's absolutely chaotic, isn't it?
Could this go all wrong for Chelsea? Because as you say, it's an extraordinary amount of cash that they've stumped up here.
Yeah, I mean, well, what's going wrong? I suppose it depends. It depends what you see by going wrong. I mean, they're buying all young players, so they'll feel like their value, you know, won't go down too much in that time, even if they have, if you don't make it at Chelsea, doesn't mean you can't make it somewhere else. But it's the length of the contracts, isn't it? 5, 6, 7, 8 year deals. I mean, I tend to feel like it won't go wrong for them. I think in terms of the ownership, it might go wrong for Graham Potter because, you know, I don't care what anybody says. I mean, he's going to have to start winning, isn't he? Because, you know, you can't have a team. We won't see the best of Chelsea, I don't think, until next year. And, you know, they could be a serious team, but they're still missing one massive part of the side, which is a goal scorer. But I don't see them like winning the league without improving on in that area. You know, was it at the moment, like Aubameyang, Havertz, you know, Lukaku to come back possibly. Maybe they'll sign João Felix permanently, but I don't see João Felix as being somebody that can play up front on his own. So it sounds ridiculous, but I think there's still more money they need to spend before they become a complete team. But that was a surprise in as much as, you know, I wasn't sure that they'd go to those lengths to buy him. Probably the biggest actual surprise was Cancelo. You know, we knew he wasn't getting on great with Guardiola because he hadn't been in the team. So something had obviously gone on. But from just out of nowhere, him going to Bayern Munich, getting an assist on his debut as well. You know, Guardiola gave an interview a while ago, didn't he, saying if a manager stays for this amount of time, he has to change the players. And, you know, he's doing that. He's living up to his word. He is changing the players, but if I'm looking at Man City, like you'd rather, and Nathan Ake's played quite well, but you'd rather Nathan Ake or the other guy they bought from Belgian football, whose name I've forgotten, you'd rather one of those two, wouldn't you, at left back rather than Cancelo, if you were playing against them. So I think it weakened City. You know, everyone else is going out really sort of trying to improve their squads, and I think City have lost an important player, even if he wasn't starting.
What did you make of league leaders Arsenal's business? Do you think they've done enough to maintain their title charge?
Yeah, I don't see what else more they could have done, really. You know, they went looking, tried to buy Caicedo, didn't they, from Brighton. I mean, that would have been a massive risk. He looks good. He looks really good. But 80 million for someone that's played, was it about 20-odd games? I mean, that would... that to me would have just felt like maybe a risk that didn't need to be taken. And when you look at Cucurella and Bissouma, they left Brighton, taking them out of the team, and they haven't missed them, have they? And that they haven't really shone at their new clubs. I think Jorginho maybe doesn't start. He doesn't get into the you know, because they've got a really good thing going with Partey and Xhaka and Odegaard. But you could see how he fits into that Arsenal midfield, couldn't you? You know, just popping the ball off and, you know, passing through the lines, a different player to Partey, somebody that could, you know, replace Xhaka in terms of if they wanted to play with two, because like Xhaka gets forward a lot more now, doesn't he? If they wanted to play with two sitters, you could see Jorginho in there. Yeah, and it was it £12 million?
Yeah,
I thought it was a good signing.
I was going to mention the fee when I first read it. I thought, well, that does seem...
He's out of contract, wasn't he? So Chelsea have got, you know, what would be a few quid for somebody that they felt they didn't overly need. But I think it's a smart signing by Arsenal. I will caveat that by saying I thought when they signed David Luiz, I thought that was a good signing.
You mentioned a couple of teams at the top there, Mark, and you also mentioned the big spending of Southampton. Do you think what you've seen this January changes your thoughts down in the bottom of the table?
It does, because Sulemana, I don't know much about Iheanacho. You know, I know they tweeted out that video, didn't they? And it was like dubbed the worst hat trick ever. I saw somebody say just like Erling Haaland. But Sulemana is somebody that I'm surprised has gone that low down at the Premier League, I must say. And one that's maybe gone under the radar would be Bournemouth, who really had a good old go in the transfer window. And that led me to think, I wonder if Gary O'Neill's living on borrowed time, because they suddenly showed a bit of ambition. And was it Zabani, the Ukrainian centre-back? He was really highly rated. I think he's a very good player. Wouldn't be surprised if he left Bournemouth pretty quickly. I was shocked that they were able to bring him in. And so, you know, we've seen the teams there having a good old go at it, and Everton not, which was pretty remarkable. They've managed to get worse, haven't they? They've sold Anthony Gordon and so far brought nobody in.
Yeah, the Anthony Gordon ones, there's a lot of money for Anthony Gordon, isn't it?
It's a lot of money, but he's homegrown. And, you know, is Anthony Gordon not playing great this season down to the fact that Everton aren't very good, or down to the fact he's not very good? I'd probably bet that it's down to the fact that Everton aren't very good and didn't have much plan or cohesion. You know, Tottenham and Chelsea wanted him in the summer. I thought there was a big player in there last year.
Time will tell. It'll be fascinating to see how these players get on at their new clubs. Mark, we must touch on the EFL Cup as well. We have our finalists. It will be Manchester United against Newcastle. It was relatively predictable going into that second leg, but once again, both teams getting the job done.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a bigger deal for Newcastle, wasn't it? You know, you saw the celebrations there. It means a lot for them. I mean, it's a quite tight final. Obviously, we've got a few weeks to go. So, who knows how things are going to change between now and then. But, you know, Newcastle, kind of the people that have expected them to fall away, and maybe I'm one of those. I mean, so far it's not happening. And they're actually, if you look at their data, they're a good side. You know, they really don't give up very many opportunities. They're an awkward team to play against because of the way they, I suppose, what would you say, manage games. Some people would say they take gamesmanship a little bit too far. But if you're looking at sort of, you know, the sort of outright prices, Man United are slight favourites, and I'd probably go along with that. But I wouldn't be surprised if it was as tight as the odds suggest, and, you know, it went all the way to penalties or something like that, because there's not much between the teams.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking forward to that one. Plenty of Premier League action to get through. Let's start with the biggest game now. We've got Tottenham against Manchester City to look forward to. 4:30 on Sunday, 18-5 Spurs, 8-11 City, 3-1 the draw. Mark, are you going?
No, I'm not. I went to the Arsenal game. Yeah, the ticket was 80 odd quid. I'm not
80 quid, was it really?
80 odd. Yeah, it was more than 80. Oh, it was, category A game.
And is it that away fans are capped at 30, or is that
they
gone?
Are,
now?
Yeah, they are capped at 30. So
you're paying 50 odd quid more than the away fans.
I was literally sat above the Arsenal fans, so I was, you know, literally paying like £58 more for my ticket than the Arsenal fan who was sat below me making a load of noise a few weeks ago. But I mean, we sidetracked on that. But you know, a lot of stuff about, you know, Simon Jordan on TalkSport talking about how stupid the Tottenham fans are for wanting Enoch out and Daniel Levy out. I mean, part of the reason for the anger at the moment is that I think they've got the you just heard how much I paid for my ticket. I mean, there's not going to be too many in Europe that are charging more than that. So I mean, if you're charging absolute top dollar, you know, you should have a team to match, shouldn't you, on the pitch?
Absolutely. I, on the flip side, though, Mark, I mean, I follow quite a few Spurs fans on Twitter, and it does feel like your fellow faithful are incredibly down on things at the moment. It does feel a little harsh.
Yeah, well, I mean, the main reason is that Arsenal are top, playing well with a young team that's full of swagger, not too dissimilar to the Pochettino team that Tottenham had. And when he wanted to make changes to that, Daniel Levy said no. And in the end, what he said would happen did happen. And so Tottenham sort of lost their way. So I think, the jealousy is raging with just how good Arsenal have been. This is a big enough game, I think, for Tottenham to, you know, to obviously they'd put a dent in City's title hopes. But, you know, they're still banging. You can certainly make that case, Jack. You know, they're banging the mix for top four. They're still in the Champions League. Sheffield United or Wrexham away in the FA Cup fifth round. There's a lot to play for. And, you know, Gary Neville was talking that Spurs are doing just fine and that maybe this is where Tottenham just should be. And I don't overly disagree with that. But I think when you're seeing Southampton spending 40 million on players, you know, is 40 million enough for Tottenham, I suppose, is what the argument is, if that makes sense.
It's so difficult, isn't it, when you're a fan to kind of be relative with your expectation. You know, it's as Neville said, you probably are where you are, but what's the fun in kind of accepting that? You constantly want to strive for more. And I guess the next thing for you guys would be a couple of notches up in the league table and challenging for the title. But at the same time, you need to manage those expectations. And that's the difficulty of a football fan, isn't it?
It absolutely is. I mean, you know, one of the arguments is, I suppose, that, you know, Antonio Conte, if you're bringing Antonio Conte in, then give him the tools he needs and he'll deliver. I don't necessarily agree with that. I mean, I've always been pretty calm about Spurs. And, you know, I think Pedro Porro, the signing from Sporting, you know, was it 39 million euros, I think, in the end. I mean, he's a big improvement on what Tottenham had at right wing back, for sure. They've got the guy that's on loan at Udinese, Adoji, that's coming in next season. I think that sort of come next season, Tottenham, you know, Porro would have settled into the Premier League. Tottenham's wing backs will be, you know, really quite exciting and better than what they've had for a long time. The problem is whether Conte's there to take an advantage, of course, and he won't be there, we don't think, on Sunday, because he's been in hospital this week, gallstones. So not sure how long he'll be away from the club. Whether that impacts on the team, I'm not so sure, because they did win away to to Marseille with him in the stands after he'd been sent off. And I think for a short period of time you can get by without a manager there, can't you? Because, you know, the planning is done over a longer period than, you know, if you just miss him for a couple of days.
In terms of Manchester City, Mark, they've already dropped a considerable amount of points this season, and in previous seasons have been known to drop points at your place as well. So it's a bit of a bogey ground for them in a way.
Well, yeah, I mean, lost all four trips to the new stadium and not scored. So, you know, it really is.
Is that right? They haven't even scored.
Yeah, missed two penalties. I think Lloris saved a couple of penalties as well. Now they've really struggled for. It's hard to know why, because they've dominated most of the matches and then just been hit on the counter attack. So, you know, even last season, of course, Tottenham won at the Etihad. They were 2-0 up there a couple of weeks ago, weren't they? Before losing 4-2. But even in that game, at 2-2, Perisic hits the woodwork, and you might have had a completely different match. So it is a bogey ground. I don't believe in bogey grounds per se, but I suppose what you would say is that Tottenham are the type of team that will cause City problems because they're so good on the counter-attack. You know, Liverpool have caused City problems because they're so good on the counter-attack. And those tend to be the type of teams that can expose a Guardiola side. You've just got to be good enough to defend and keep them out for 90 minutes, which is much easier said than done, but something Tottenham have done previously, at least at in North London.
How do you see this one going then?
Yeah, I just don't like City's price. And, you know, if you look at it, it's not really to do with the bogey ground, but they lost at Man United. They lost at Liverpool. They drew at Newcastle away from home. They haven't been great, Man City, even in the Champions League. You know, some surprising results. So I was just going to go for Tottenham or draw double chance. I mean, I just think it's going to be a bit of a slog for City and they might not be up to it.
There we go then. Let's get through the rest of the Premier League card. Friday night football, Chelsea against Fulham. Mark, you mentioned earlier about Graham Potter needing wins, and on paper, this would probably be a decent opportunity, but Fulham have been very good this season.
Fulham have been very good, you know, and West London's top dogs for much of the campaign. What I would say about Fulham is they lost all four away games to the teams that are currently above them. Now, I know Chelsea are struggling, but generally speaking, you know, they're big six. I expect them to have a stronger finish to the season, even if they don't make the top four. I really like their performance against Liverpool, second half at least. I saw the beginnings of a new team there. And even before that, Crystal Palace, five shots on target. So, I mean, we are starting to see them when they won that game. So I think we are starting to see them create round about the 4-7 mark. I thought was okay to stick in your Akers. And, you know, if you do like to bet at those kind of prices, was a way to go.
Let's take a look at the early game on Saturday, Everton against Arsenal. Now, the other game on the television at that time includes Norwich. And Mark was laughing at me last time. I suggested you should watch Norwich against Coventry as opposed to Liverpool against Chelsea. And I think I'm the one laughing now because there was five goals in the opening 25 minutes of that Norwich-Coventry game. And there was none in the Liverpool game. So
yeah, well, Jack, I'm surprised you're speaking to me. I'm probably not famous enough, am I, now after your exclusive David Wagner interview that you had on your your Norwich YouTube channel earlier on this week. Mixing with the stars. Did you enjoy that?
He was a lovely fella, Wagner. Yeah, you can tell that him and Jurgen Klopp are best friends. They've lots of similarities. It was we obviously had Daniel Farker managers before, and although it's sort of similarities, very different people. Wagner was would just burst out laughing at different stages. I don't think I ever heard Mr. Farker laugh at any point. But yeah, that was good fun. But in terms of this game, I suspect you'll be watching Norwich, Mark, as you always do. But for those that will be watching Everton against Arsenal, what can they expect?
Well, I mean, obviously, you know, since we last did a pod, Sean Dyche has come in as Everton manager. But I understand why they've done it. I think if you were looking for a sensible choice, you know, Dyche is probably that person. I would have loved to have seen Bielsa give it a go. Even, you know, I even loved his idea of managing the under-21 until the end of the season. And the thing is, I can just see Everton, even if they do stay up, being in the same position in 12 months' time where the fans are not happy with the football. You know, Dyche is one-dimensional. You know, he does what he does and it's not too bad. But, you know, I just thought it smacked of another short-term appointment. What I do think, though, is that he might be able to get at least a rise out of the team initially. And so this is probably a harder game for Arsenal than it would have been. And, you know, I don't think you want to be back in Arsenal at 2-5. You're just not sure whether Dyche will be or Dyche, as I people called him Dyche. That's incorrect, isn't it? It's Dyche, he said. I didn't know that previously. I'm looking at draw Arsenal double result. So Dyche to fire them up early doors, you know, make it difficult. Arsenal's class to tell. And I did think it was quite interesting that five of Arsenal's last seven away games have been level at the break. And that's not always been against Man City like it was last week.
Yeah, it should be an intriguing one, that. Quite a few Saturday 3 o'clock games this week, which was nice. And we'll start with Villa against Leicester.
I was looking at the draw in this game. Villa weren't amazing in beating Leeds and Southampton. You know, good points to get on the board. But I think had those games finished in draws or maybe even less, then it wouldn't have been a massive surprise. So I'm not sort of fully on board with the Unai Emery trainer. I mean, he's got it going in the right direction, but they're short enough, I think, to win this game. Leicester not being in great form, obviously. Madison's return, absolutely huge. You know, his absence has been, I think, the reason why they've been so terrible in recent weeks. So he was back for the cup game, and I think with him back, they might be able to get a point.
Couple of difficult games to call in the docket this week, and Brentford against Southampton is one of those.
I think Brentford are fair enough to win the game. I mean, Southampton, look at their Premier League results. I mean, last 15, 11 losses, 2 draws, and the wins were against Everton and Bournemouth. Brentford are better than both of those, no doubt about it. Don't always beat the kind of lesser lights, and so there is a bit of nervousness there from me. But they did beat Bournemouth easily enough a couple of weeks ago at home. So, I just think I look at the two teams, look at the way they're coached, and think that Brentford are very worthy at the price they are.
Okay, fair enough. Brighton against Bournemouth.
Well, Brighton 1-3. I mean, how often will Brighton have been 1-3 to
remarkable,
win
isn't
a
it?
Premier League game? I mean, they're going great, no doubt about that. I wouldn't back them at 1-3. I even if they deserve to be it, there's just something in my mind going Brighton 1-3 to win a Premier League game. No, I can leave that alone. And I did mention, didn't I, that Bournemouth, I mean, Zabiani come in. Uatara as well, that played last week and did well. Semeneo from Bristol City, Vina from Roma, Hamed Traore from Sassuolo in Italy. This Bournemouth team looks very different to even a week ago. So I think you can hold off backing that 1-3 on that basis, because maybe this Bournemouth team's better. The way I was looking here was to just back over 2.5 goals. I mean, 12 of Brighton's last 13 have gone over 2.5. Bournemouth have pepped up their attack, but Brighton could cover the line by themselves. You know, they're so good going forward now. So, over 2.5.
When a team makes a few new additions to their squad, Mark, do you have to approach the games with a degree of caution, or does that not really affect the way you look at it?
I think in terms of a degree of caution, if they're outsiders and they've brought in 4, 5, 6 new players, then I think, and you think that they're good players, then I don't think you're too cautious. I think you say this Bournemouth team is like much better than the one that's been playing all this season. So the league table's lying. And I think that they've given themselves a chance now of staying up. So, I think that Bournemouth are an interesting proposition here, actually, to at least cause some problems for 1-3 shots in Brighton. Where I would be cautious is if a kind of team's priced up at 1-3 and they've lost a couple of players, and or they've brought in a couple of players you're not quite sure how they're going to fit in, then I'm more cautious. I think you can definitely start taking a chance. This might not be the best spot to back Bournemouth. So in some ways, I'm hoping they get absolutely hammered. But I think brighter days could be ahead for Bournemouth after their January dealings.
Okay, very good. Manchester United against Palace. Mark, it feels kind of strange to be saying this because we haven't with United in the past few years, but you just look at the whole squad and there's kind of talent in every position now, and not only that, but kind of living up to expectation as well. It's a good time to be a United fan.
Yeah, they're on the up, no doubt about that. Obviously got the Wembley trip to look forward to. The title charge lasted about a week, didn't it? But I mean, there's more realistic is a top four finish. You know, they're in a cup final. If they get top four, that I think that's been a really good season from where they started. The Eriksen injury, though, I think is a key one. He's somebody that definitely helps them to sort of move the ball up the pitch. They brought in Sabitzer right on the deadline day, another one that came out of absolutely nowhere. He'll try to do that role. I don't think he's as good as Eriksen, but at least it's somebody. And, they did react. the way I'm looking to play this one, Man United to win in under 3.5 goals. United's last 5 home games in the Premier League have all been wins with under 3.5. And we just saw the efficient job that they did on Forest in midweek. I'm kind of expecting something similar against a Palace team that doesn't offer that much punch in the final third.
Let's take a look at Wolves against Liverpool. Mark, Liverpool, I'm kind of concentrating the times I've watched them in the past couple of weeks, just how shot they are defensively. I mean, just all over the place.
Yeah, all over the place defensively. But what about in attack? Last 5 games, they've had 12 shots on target. I mean, that's so unlike Liverpool. Like,
what have you made of Gakpo so far?
I think he's done okay. I don't know what more you could expect of somebody that's come from the Eredivisie into a struggling team, been played already in 2 different positions, up front and on the wing. I thought he showed some nice touches at times, but he was never going to be the finished article straight away. I mean, it's a longer-term project. I think the more interesting one for me is Mohamed Salah, who's, he's so often Liverpool's, like king, wasn't he? And he's just not, the fans sing about him being the Egyptian king. I mean, he just doesn't look half the player that he was. He doesn't look as motivated.
What do you think that's down to?
Well, I hope it's not motivation, because he, of course, signed that new contract, didn't he, that all Liverpool fans wanted him to. And you do one, I suppose there must be a touch of doubt as to whether it's that. To me, he doesn't look happy. Even Klopp your mate David Wagner will probably know more, but Klopp doesn't seem in love with some of his players at the moment. You know, like the bear hugs have gone, haven't they? You know, that big grin with the whitest of white teeth. That's gone. I wonder if he's not offering enough protection to Trent Alexander-Arnold down that wing. Whether he's working hard enough, don't know. I don't know. What, have you got any thoughts?
Well, I just think that often in football, like, cycles do come to an end, and I think we always cling on to often managers, but players as well, just a couple of seasons too long. And I'm by no means saying that Klopp's no longer the right man for Liverpool, but we're kind of seeing it with City to a degree in the league this season as well. Like, these cycles will come to an end, and whether it's freshening up, the attack of Liverpool, or maybe it is a different coach, I'm not sure, but we're too clingy as fans, I think.
I think you keep Klopp and you change the players. I think that's what you do, and there's still the makings there of a very interesting team. Got Jota to come back, haven't they? Luis Diaz, Nunez, I think, can only get better as well. They need some surgery in midfield that I'm sure Jurgen Klopp will recognise, and I think that's what you do. I would say it would be the wrong decision to get rid of Klopp, say in the summer or something like that. He's not the issue for me. Whether it needs new players or not, that's a different story. I wouldn't be against them ripping it up and having 3 new midfielders next year, for instance.
Well, they travel to Wolves this weekend. How do you see it playing out?
I'm going to go for Wolves or draw a double chance. I think Liverpool still being priced up on reputation. Like I said, 12 shots on target in their last 5 games. Like, it's just not good enough. It's just not Liverpool. They're playing like a team that sort of, I don't know, lacking motivation maybe. Like, the whole season, I think, depends on the Champions League now, doesn't it?
That's dangerous
because, Liverpool and Chelsea have done it before. That can actually be a great place to, you can concentrate fully on the Champions League. But, I wouldn't be backing Liverpool odds on to win at Molineux.
Okay, let's take a look at the evening game on Saturday then. It's Newcastle against West Ham. We've already touched on Newcastle a bit already in this podcast, Mark. So let's turn our focus to West Ham. Couple of wins on the bounce. I know one of those in the cup. The win in the Premier League, of course, came against an Everton side that just looked really, really poor at the moment. How do you see this one going?
Yeah, I see Newcastle winning and under 3.5 goals, 6 straight Premier League clean sheets for Newcastle. I mean, they just...
It's remarkable, isn't it?
It is, it's just a machine defensively. Everybody knows what they're doing, and they're making it difficult for opponents to have worthwhile chances against them. I'm sure it'll turn, just in, they're not having no bad luck. if that makes sense. You know, like there hasn't been like a shot just flown in from 30 yards, you know, that can change a game. Mitrovic gets the penalty, falls over, for instance. You know, like those type of things are just going for them, and at some stage they won't. But while they are, I think you just keep rolling with Newcastle. Wasn't surprised West Ham beat Derby. I thought, as I mentioned on the on here last week, and in the Racing Post, I changed it to my best bet when I was in the jury on Saturday, because Real Madrid had played extra time on the Thursday night when we'd already done the pod, and it was making me a bit nervous for that one. But I wasn't surprised they beat Derby. This is a completely different test. I just think that they're solid enough defensively, but they've got problems up front at the moment. Antonio wanted to leave, wasn't allowed to. Scamacca's not fully fit. Danny Ings, you know, no surprise there, he's injured. So, I suppose, lacking the right ingredients in sort of those attacking midfield positions as to what's the best way to go, and then maybe not having a clinical striker as well. So Newcastle to grind it out again.
Okay, we've already previewed one of the Sunday games. Let's take a look at the other. It's Forest against Leeds. I'm going to say again, Mark, I'm finding it difficult to call this one. I'm sure you're going to go, it's my strongest opinion of the week.
No, tough one. But whenever Leeds are involved in a game and both teams are scoring 8-11, I'm interested. Maybe away to Man City when they're not having much of the ball. But the way that they play, they go straight through the middle at teams. It's one-dimensional in some ways, but they just throw lots of bodies forward, leave themselves exposed defensively. Forest have scored in their last 8 Premier League home games. Leeds have had 1 away clean sheet in Premier League. 8 of their last 12 on the have been both teams to score. I just think it all stacks up at the prices to get with both teams to score. I'd prefer it if Morgan Gibbs-White was playing, because I think he's a massive talent for Nottingham Forest. But even if he's not, Leeds often just give you chances.
Okay, that's your Premier League card, Mark. Let's take a look at the EFL action with Dan Childs.
And now we're joined by my Racing Post colleague, Dan Childs, to talk all things EFL. How are you, Childsy?
Yeah, very good. Thanks, Mark.
Excellent. So, obviously, busy transfer deadline week. A lot of squads that are changing. Does that impact sort of your research and the way that you sort of place your bets immediately after something like this?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of the teams. I mean, people look at the late business that's done in the Premier League, but actually lower down the leagues, there's even more late business because they're often waiting to see what players are going to become available. So you'd be amazed that, you know, how many teams have signed players, you know, last knockings in the window. And it does have a big, you know, a lot of times these guys, they're waiting for them because they're the best players to become available so they can make a big difference. So yeah, it will definitely impact on bets straight away.
Okay. I don't know if there's any sort of new players that you're expecting to sort of improve teams immediately in this week's best bets. How many bets have you got for us? And you can lead off with your best one.
Yeah, got three bets, starting off with in the Championship with Bristol City away to Preston. I mean, Bristol City, funny enough, are one of the teams that have lost quite a key player towards the end of the window. Lost Antoine Semenyo a week ago, sold him to Bournemouth. But I feel with Bristol City, there's a bit of a plan going forward. They're happy with Sam Bell, who's a really good academy player coming in. Got 2 goals for them in a 3-0 win at home to West Brom in the FA Cup fourth round last weekend. They've got, you know, plenty of other decent attacking players. Andy Vyman, you know, still around the squad. Naki Wells is a threat. Alex Scott in midfield is one of the best young midfielders out, you know, across the EFL, been courted by a lot of Premier League clubs. So I think they're a club, Bristol City, 7 games unbeaten, going the right way. And I think this is a good time to play Preston. They're struggling sort of for goals at the moment without Emil Reese, who's been sort of injured, I think, for, you know, since the turn of the year. Last home league game, they lost 4-0 at home to Norwich. It was a real, they ran into Norwich at a difficult time. Norwich had a new manager. And then I watched them against Spurs in the FA Cup fourth round, and they were really toothless in that game, lost 3-0. So, you know, when you're not scoring goals, lacking a goal threat, and you're shipping them, it's not a good combination. Bristol City are odds against, draw no bet in this game. I think that's a decent bet.
Okay. And then in terms of your next best, this is quite interesting, actually, just on Preston. There was an interview Ryan Lowe gave to the Telegraph this week where they went behind the scenes for the couple of days leading up to that Tottenham game. They were in the dressing room before, during, at halftime and also after. So there might be some interest there from punters. Particularly, I noticed when they were doing set pieces, Mike Marsh, or Marshy, as he was referred to, they did a lot of planning around getting Lindsay, the centre-back, free at the back post. So might be one for the... hopefully doesn't score against Bristol City, Charlesy. But
it could be a first score interest, yeah. I mean, yeah. Centre-back probably be going off around 33 to 1. So,
yeah. So we've got the rampant Robins of Bristol City. Who else are you backing this week?
Yeah, we've got two League Two bets, two League Two tips, starting off with Crewe at home to Grimsby. Crewe, I fancy Crewe drawing our bet in this one at 6-4. I mean, just looking at the league table, Crewe in 16th. Grimsby in 17th. So Crewe actually, you know, a point above Grimsby in the table and playing at home. But there's a lot more science behind it than just looking at the league table. Crewe are actually improving a little bit this year. They've had four games unbeaten. Three of them have been draws, but the most recent of them, they played at home to Stockport on Tuesday. And Stockport are one of the most improved teams in League Two over the last 3 months. They've really, you know, got themselves going. And they went into that game, Stockport, as odds-on favourites. And Crewe have drawn the game 1-1. And you look at the stats on the match as well, they've outshot them 16 shots to 8. So that is really encouraging for Crewe. That was their first game, Crewe, after 17 days due to postponement. So looks like they've done a lot of good work on the training ground there and, you know, to produce a good performance. It's also a good time for them to play Grimsby, I feel, as well. Grimsby not been on a great run in the league, and they've got a massive FA Cup fourth round replay at home to Luton to come on Tuesday. Grimsby are not going to be going up. They're highly unlikely to be going down as well. I think this Luton fourth round tie for a club of their resources is a big game for them. Wouldn't be surprised if they were distracted. And Crewe, as I've said, are improving. I think those odds drawn, I bet, are a really good bet.
Okay, and to round it off this week,
to round it off with the big improving team, Colchester. We spoke about the transfer window. Colchester at home to Barrow. I fancy Colchester just to get a home win here. Colchester in the window have been very, very active. And they've been signing, you know, not just quantity, but quality as well. You look at some of the guys that have come in. Fiacre Kelleher, the centre-back from Bradford, who's a very decent player. Matt Jay, they've got a good midfielder from Exeter. Tom Hopper from Lincoln, who's been, you know, played plenty of games for Lincoln when he's been fit.
Charlesy, that's caused big ripples in the South End area because they liked him at South End, and now he's gone to Cole U. Not happy, well, some of them.
Well, they're not going to be happy with that one, are they, with a rivalry there? But these players, Matt Jay and Tom Hopper, they're decent League One players. So for a Colchester to bring these guys in, you know, towards the bottom of League Two, they're spending some serious money to make sure of staying up. But it has already had a big impact on results, these new incomings. 13 points from 6 games, Colchester, in January. They've gone from being relegation form to almost, you know, showing more like promotion form. And they're up against Barrow, they're going the other way, really. They've gone from, since the start of December, they've gone from 4th in the table to 9th. Over that time, they've taken just 6 points from 9 games. They'll have a 5-1 away to Carlisle in the derby on Tuesday. So they're having a really rough time at the moment, Barrow. At the moment, there's 10 points between Barrow and Colchester. The way the clubs are going, I wouldn't be surprised to see Colchester even possibly finish above Barrow. And when you think you're getting, I'm looking at it, 13-8 for Colchester to win at home, I think it's a great bet. Probably the bet of the weekend.
Okay, fine. Well, good luck with that one. You might even persuaded me to go. I'm not doing anything on Saturday. Colchester's not that far for me. But thanks very much, Dan, for
You're
those.
You're welcome.
And, we've got Bristol City, Crewe and Colchester United.
There we go. Brilliant to hear from Dan Charles, always. Very convincing argument at the end there. Mark, you're following on from Dan, and I hope you got your salesman tactics on here, because there were some very good arguments in there. Let's start with the prop shop.
Yeah, so Tete, Fulham right back, to be booked at 3-1. 6 yellows in 17 games, including matches against Liverpool, Tottenham and Manchester City. I've had this one down for a couple of weeks. When Mudryk came on against Liverpool, thought he was such a massive threat down that left-hand side. You know, dribbled for fun, loads of pace. Milner couldn't handle him at all, and just sort of brought him down. So I just thought the right back for the rest of the Premier League season could be in for a tough old time against him. So Tete at Fulham to be booked.
We had a couple of tweets last week, Mark. I'm not sure if you saw them, asking what exactly a player prop shop is. You want to just explain it?
Well, I mean, it's more a US language, isn't it? Where it's just a player special. So we're either doing player to score, we're doing players to have a shot, players to be booked. It could be passes, although sort of passes and tackles, their odds seem to come later on, as does, some bookmakers do to score or assist, or we might do somebody to do an assist. I've always found the assist price is pretty tight, in last few weeks we've had good success, haven't we, with the player shots on target market. Couldn't do it last week because of the FA Cup and the prices were out late. This week nothing really jumps off the page, and like I say, I'd had this one down for a while that I wanted to be sort of, I suppose, with Mudrick and just looking at ways to oppose the whoever the right backs are playing against him in the next few weeks.
Basically, if you hear Mark put up someone to get a shot on target, back them to score, because that's what always happens.
Yeah, that's been annoying. That has been
annoying. How about a long shot for this week then, Mark?
A long shot, I mean, is 11-2 a long shot? It feels long enough of a shot in terms of football. Newcastle to win 1-0 against West Ham. They've already had 6 1-0s this season. They're so solid defensively. West Ham haven't got a huge amount up front. I mean, to me, it feels like the most likely outcome at St James's.
Yeah, that does stand out as a decent price. We've had a few good treble successes this season. Let's try and find another this week.
Yes, I'm going to break the golden rule. I mean, how many people ever go stick a Friday one in there? But I do, and this is going against the Racing Post selection this week, but I think Chelsea beat Fulham. I think they're on the up, and I'm going for them to beat Fulham. Manchester United to beat Crystal Palace would be the second one there. I think I've mentioned this before. I just think Palace not having a particularly good season and just not getting away with it because they are mid-table, I suppose. What more can you expect? But I just think it's quite average, I suppose, and Man United should be able to beat them. And then finally, Bolton going along very nicely in League One, them to beat Cheltenham. Bolton had 24 shots at the Valley last week, so a very impressive win that was for them.
Superb. We've already heard Charlesy's best bet of the week. What's yours?
Yeah, Brighton v Bournemouth, over 2.5 goals. I mentioned earlier on in the preview that Brighton obviously been involved in a lot of high-scoring games lately. 12 of their last 13 have featured at least 3 goals. What I like is actually in their last 3 home games, they've had 20 shots on target. Those 3 home games were against 2 against Liverpool and 1 against Arsenal. So they're absolutely raining them in. So we know they're going to go for it. And I think Bournemouth have made some quite interesting signings over the last week or so and can play their part. And if they don't, and they do go down, then it's not a big surprise if Brighton cover the line themselves.
Okay, brilliant stuff as always, Mark. Thanks so much for all of your insight. For those listening at home, Mark and Dan have put up a lot of selections this week. Please don't feel the need to back them all. Only ever gamble with money that you can afford to lose. We'll be back again next Thursday. If you never want to miss an episode of Mark Langdon's Bets Club, then simply subscribe on your podcast player of choice. Stay safe and we'll see you all again very soon. Bye-bye.